Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary. Ba-da.
I love it. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever time it is when you're listening to this. Hi there, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tony Perkins.
And I'm Gary Stein.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very happy to see you.
I'm happy to see you.
It's probably been 2 days since I've seen you. I'm very...
We spend a lot more time together now.
Oh my God. You know, we really do. Like Good Morning America days.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. I like it.
I see you more than I see my wife.
Wow.
Yeah.
I see your wife quite a bit.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do, and that's got to stop.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We've got a great episode planned for you today. Joining us, running the board for the first time ever, Rob Ford Jr. has graduated.
I have.
I should have asked you to pull that music. What is that, Pomp and Circumstance?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pomp and Circumstance.
How's it feel sitting over there?
It feels pretty good. I have a great view of all you.
Oh,
you look pretty good.
Yeah,
well, Gary was commenting before the show that now he can see my whole face as opposed to my profile.
He was always in profile, so I asked maybe for my comfort, because it's all about me, maybe he should sit sideways. Because that's all I'm used to.
Well, hopefully it will go well. Well, I'm sure it will.
Oh, yeah.
And this is it's a big deal. Rob has been our intern.
Yes.
What episode number is this?
57.
Yeah, right. Is it 15?
15.
Or 15.
Yeah.
15. So 15 episodes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Rob Ford takes over.
There's another big reason to celebrate somebody in the room today.
Yeah.
It's the return of Oscar Santana.
Oscar Santana.
He's here.
Salutations.
Unbelievable.
Now, I don't know about, I mean, you know.
The hot chick has returned.
That's right.
We
and he dressed slutty.
Oh, yeah.
We were going to talk to you about that. So look, it's no surprise to our fans, our audience, that Rob Spiewak has been here for quite a while.
Yes.
And I was concerned that some of that might push Oscar right into therapy. Because
it's competition. It's always competition.
And you expressed some of your feelings about it. I mean...
I remember that. You know, I usually don't like to show my jealous stripes.
Yeah.
But I think on...
was hard to tell.
On the Mike O'Mara show, I had mentioned that.
Yes.
You know, I was Wally Pipped.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
I actually, you know, because we couldn't see you, I was listening to the show. I felt the tear falling from your eye.
Yeah, in slow motion.
And really, that you had been pipped by us.
Yes.
And that we preferred Rob. Oh. And that wasn't true. You know, we just, it's just sort of the way things broke down. But I had no idea that it was probably, and you know, as it's turned out, seriously affect your relationship with Rob Spiewak.
It was tough, because when Rob told me that they needed you for the next taping, they needed him for the next taping, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's like almost how you break up with somebody.
Yes.
But you never really go and tell them you want to break up. It's kind of like a high school breakup where you have a friend tell them.
Yeah.
So Rob came to me. It's like we were dating.
Yes.
And Rob came to me and said, hey, the guys really need me to come in next week because we have a bit we've worked out already.
Yeah.
And I said, look, if the guys like you more, like I totally understand. Like,
yes. Yeah.
You know, you're probably a better producer than I am.
Were you at dinner at that point? Or
no. He told me right before we did the Mike O'Mara show. Like, and my head was like in a bad space at the time.
Oh.
And I said, dude, like, just tell me. And he's like, no, we're just doing like a nice bit together. And I said, no, it's cool, man. They probably like you more. It's all right. I was like, this could have waited till after the show, like, so I have a nice space.
Yeah.
He goes, no, it's just gonna be temporary. Six shows later, like, it was just.
Yeah.
It was the breakup, non-breakup, and I was like, oh, man.
Well, you know what? It might have been a cowardly breakup. And that's, look, there's a point to all of this. This is why Tony and I wanted you to do the show today, because we wanted to break up with you in person.
Oh, no! That's not true.
Damn it.
Not true. And there's
it's
never
fine.
Been any
I'm
breakup.
Used to
and
it.
We, yeah, no.
Yeah,
here
we go. No.
But there's
is the format flipping in?
No.
I can't even talk. My feelings are really hurt right now.
You know
I
what?
Do this for a living.
We're going to soft rock.
Yeah, that's right. Starting next week. That was bread.
Here's what we want. We want you to just be yourself. Be relaxed.
We love you.
Have a good time. If you're not as funny as Rob, he'll be back next week.
I'll keep that in mind. All right? Thank you.
No.
You know what Rob's doing today, actually?
Yeah, this is his big trip to see Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis.
So now, let me just, and I love Rob. I love both of you guys.
Yeah.
But Gary, just so you're clear, Rob has now, you know, he has kind of said, we now know what the pecking order is.
Yeah.
Jerry
Careful.
Lewis.
Yeah.
Gary and Tony.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is the weird thing about it.
Actually, Jerry Lewis, Mike O'Mara show.
Oh, of course.
Cakes
of course.
And cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary and Tony.
Cake and cookies.
Cake and cookies.
We never get that.
It's not cakes. It's cakes from the junkies.
John Oville on this week.
They should do that one week.
So when Rob told me, he goes, hey, on the 18th, if you can... cover for me because I'm going out of town to see Jerry. I said, oh, wow, he must be flying somewhere. Maybe he's going to New York City.
Right.
Like, how far is he going to see Jerry Lewis? Where could he be playing? Maybe Vegas.
Right.
I know that Rob's a big fan because you guys, you know, if you're keeping track at home, they record the show on Saturdays around, it depends, 11 noon, and mm-hmm. then maybe it'll go to 4 o'clock, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So on a long day, you're probably done usually by 3, 2:30. Right. And I started figuring out where Jerry was going because I looked at the concert
where
calendar.
Rob's going,
Jerry was playing.
Oh, gotcha.
And I said, wow. I was like, Rob like must really love Jerry if he's going to miss this gig that he loves.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jerry is playing an hour down the road. He was just taking a Saturday
to
go see Jerry Lewis, which, by the way, his show starts at 7:30 p.m.
Whoa. He's really calling Rob out. He is.
There is some
on to you, Spiewak.
I want to ask you something about the impression you just did of Rob. Did he have his testicles removed?
Not Rob. Just has a different affect. Well, you probably don't notice it because there's a lot of processing on his voice that goes through the system. So when he's on mic, he's like, hey, guys. When he's off mic, it's, hey, guys. But
I'm
since
glad
you interact with him more on mic.
Listen, I got to say, I'm glad to hear somebody make jokes about someone else with a high voice. Because I'm getting killed on the O'Meara show. And, I'm going to take lessons. I told you, you know, when Jeff Penn was on with all that resonance in his voice, I felt very incomplete.
Your voice
incomplete,
is fine.
Very
your
incomplete.
Voice is
and
fine.
If Mike doesn't make fun of you, that means like you're doing something wrong.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
All right. Good to go.
Well, hopefully you and Rob will patch up. It sounds like there's some bad
It's been a long relationship to have it die just over us.
Over us, yeah. We've gotten between them. We have.
But you feel a little good about it.
No, I feel... Rob, that was Rob Ford. Rob Ford, I feel tremendous. I feel that Tony and I affected something, and that's a good thing.
We like
that's
that.
Right, exactly.
We like that. Hey, before we go on, and we have a guest coming on in a couple of moments.
So you better talk now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'll tell you about that.
He
go
can
ahead.
Talk. All right, let me do this. Listen, everybody. Now, I haven't
Could
read
you
this.
Use a higher voice?
Yes. Listen, everybody. We work hard to bring you a brand new episode. I sound like Mickey Mouse.
You do.
That is a great voice, though.
You know, it's a great voice, but you actually sounded like Minnie.
I do sound more like Minnie.
Yeah.
Hey, Mickey. Don't, they sound kind of similar, actually.
Well, try it. Go
All
ahead.
Right. Hey, everybody. We work hard to bring you a brand new episode every week, and your response has been absolutely fantastic, and we thank you. Now, just one more thing. Please subscribe to the Tony Perkins Show on iTunes. An iTunes subscription is the absolute best way to follow this show, and it helps us out tremendously. The easiest way to... What is this, an essay?
When is your voice going to strain?
The easiest way to subscribe is to search More Broadcasting and click on The Tony Perkins Show. Also, while you're in the neighborhood, I know we're asking a lot of you, but the show is free, so you could do something, you lazy sons of... Anyway, also, while you're in the neighborhood, why not leave us a 5-star rating and a nice review? It'll make you feel really good.
So this is the key. Thank you.
You know what? He was a little too comfortable doing that voice.
Like he said it with the sock puppet before.
Yeah. Yes.
He left by the window.
That's called dating.
Right. Well, what is the key, Oscar?
The point is this. People should listen any way they'd like. like to listen.
Sure.
So if they listen through the website, TonyPerkinsShow.com, if they listen through the app, which they can find more broadcasting, type in Tony Perkins, Michael Mara Show, whatever. If they listen through our app, that's perfect as well. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how you listen to the show, subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah.
You don't have to listen through iTunes. You don't have to do that, but it helps the show if you hit that subscribe button. It helps the show. That's the most important
aspect.
Say
it again, Oscar. What does it do for us? Go ahead.
It helps the show. You know what that does for the show?
Yes.
That lets people on iTunes know, and the people at Apple know, that people are listening to the show. It ranks you up.
That's great.
That's what happens.
And here's the other thing. It actually is good for the listeners as well. My niece has subscribed to us on her iPhone.
Yes.
And you get the show automatically. As soon as that new episode comes up, it comes right to your phone. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything else.
Same thing. Some people, if they have an Android device, maybe they don't have the right app, they can still use the More Broadcasting app. So whichever way you listen is fine. Stick to it. But if you haven't subscribed on iTunes, do it today.
All right.
And really, you know what?
Thank you for doing it.
No problem.
And the technology is so good today that if you download it that way, you get the show before we've even recorded it.
It is amazing.
it's unbelievable. Yeah,
that's a special. You have to pay a dollar for that, actually.
You do.
But you can get the show before we've recorded it.
And it's been very good for us because then we know what to talk about when we actually do the show.
I'm listening right now.
to our next show.
Yeah, exactly. I know we've got a guest coming on the line here. But again, if you whether you're an Android user or an iPhone user or anything else, just subscribe and listen whichever way you'd like, but just subscribe on iTunes.
All right, we get it, Rob. I mean, Oscar.
Well, then, I know I've gained a couple LBs, but seriously.
Listen, we had such a great time with Chris Paul 2 weeks ago, I think it was, whenever it was, you know, having a comedian on the show. Really funny. We've got another comedian guest. This guy has been around forever. I met him.
It's not Buster Keaton.
No, no. Well, not that forever. I met him in the 80s. Jackie Martling. Jackie the Joke Man.
Yes.
Who is one of the funniest people. This guy must know thousands of jokes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know Jackie, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just warn you. I'm putting out a warning.
Okay.
We talk a lot, you and I. I will bet, and I want to, maybe we can actually count words at the end of the show. I don't think, I've said this before, I don't think we're going to get a word in edgewise.
Oh.
No, no. That's another expression of my grandmother's, edgewise. Like, hold the wire, you know.
Get a word in edgewise.
I can't get a word in edgewise.
Well, that one's more common, though.
But how do you get a word in edgewise? Is that sideways?
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
I know what it means, but I don't know where that would come from.
Well, see, the origins of expressions, which we've enjoyed
now
doing.
Now we're cooking with gas.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's try to get Jackie on the phone. Right?
I wasn't done.
Oh, okay. What else do you have to say?
No, I'm done. Believe me, I'll be done for the next hour. You'll see.
Hello?
Jackie the Joke Man?
Who's this?
This is Tony Perkins, Gary Stein's good friend.
I do not speak to Asians.
I'm not an Asian, but if this is how we're going to start, I still might be in trouble.
All right.
This could be a very long interview, but not in a good way.
Jack,
can I tell you something?
Yes, Jack.
It already is.
Already too long for you. Jackie Martling, thank you for joining us. How are you, man?
This has been great, Jackie. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much.
Jackie, I'm Tony. You know Gary. We also have Oscar Santana in the room.
Hey now.
And we also have Rob Ford Jr.
Hello. He's our engineer.
Yes. How are you, sir?
I will give you the two rules.
Okay.
Number one, I don't want that crackhead Rob Ford in the room. And if somebody says, hey now again, I'm hanging up. And after that, you're all mine. I'll tell you, Tony, I have been... Don't screw up my interview with your laughter.
I'll try to contain myself.
There's nothing funnier than being on stage and having people's laughter screw up your timing.
I rehearsed this without laughs. This will screw me up.
I just want you to know that Tony said last week something about sticking it to the man, and I almost walked out of the studio.
Oh, my God. You know, I was trying my best to listen to one of your podcasts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I was listening last night, and I was actually really enjoying it. And then I was trying to imagine if there's any reason in hell that I'd be listening to it if I wasn't going to be on it.
Yeah.
And but I'm just being a jerk because I really did enjoy it. You guys sound wonderful together. But I forget about all that. I am so jealous about how professional and beautiful and wonderful the app is, and it clicks through. And you guys, the sound of your podcast. I mean, my radio show sounds horrible. I think on Sirius, they walk around and they look for the worst microphones in the worst shape and plug them in for us. And you guys really sound good, and you do finish each other's sentences. I haven't figured out this Oscar guy yet, and I guess Rob is an intern, but I'm not that well-versed in your program yet, but don't tell me anything. Let me find out on my own. There's got to be some reward to listening to that stupid podcast. So
Eventually there will be,
One will be that if you don't let us speak, you're finished. So you're done. You're off the air.
Hey, listen, we appreciate you listening, and we take pride in how the show sounds and the equipment and everything we're doing. This is the real deal. We're doing this for real. It's not one of those things people do in their garage with a Radio Shack kit that they set up.
We're not in Tony's basement.
Oh, my God, Gary.
Yes.
He believed me.
Wait a minute. You know what? You got to stick to the script, because told me last night that you were going to just lay that out and leave it. But you couldn't help it, could you?
No. Let me tell you, I've called into a billion radio shows over the year. And right now I would feel like $1 million, and I would feel like I was killing. Except, unfortunately, I listen to your podcast, and every time somebody sneezed, you laugh this hard. So I know I'm not killing. I'm just filling blanks.
No.
But it's nice to talk to you guys. Let's start from the beginning.
Listen, my laugh is genuine. I have always thought you're one of the funniest guys out there. I don't know if you remember me. I suspect you don't. But I did comedy.
He's the black guy.
I was the black guy at Garvin's. I think I actually emceed a show that you were headlining at Garvin's once. But before I even started doing comedy, I used to see you perform there, and then to actually hang around while you were doing shows and emcee a show that you were a part of was just thrilling. So it's great to talk to you again after all these years.
It's nice to talk to you, and you can feel the respect when I hold back the horses from the you all look alike line.
I think you did a great job there.
Oh,
I really do. Because I know what it's like for you to find restraint.
It was like 30 seconds or so.
For you, that's a lifetime.
Now, let me tell you, I don't know if you guys hear this beep beep, but every once in a while it's a beep beep. I've had a dial a joke since 1979, when we started comedy on Long Island, before there were comedy clubs. Me and Richie Minervini, who's now Kevin James's opening act and is standing in the movies, my oldest friend in comedy, we started a show on Long Island upstairs in a restaurant bar in 1979. And to get people there, I created 516-922-WINE, which is a dial-a-joke. It built to where it was 10 machines in my mother's attic and actually was getting over 5 or 10,000 calls a day. It was crazy. It is completely dwindled to one line. I have two lines in my home, and the second line is 922-WINE. So if you hear a beep, 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 that's somebody calling 922-WINE. We've gone from 10,000 calls a day to one about every 3 weeks.
Oh. I did just hear it, but Jackie, that was me.
Oh, trying to make me feel good. Listen, Tony, I feel like I've met you and that your name sounded familiar, and Garvin's is a long time ago, but I've absolutely held back every time I've talked to Gary, because from the minute he said you're from Garvin's, I had a tale to tell, but I did not want to spill any of the beans.
Oh, I want to hear it. I'm sure you've got plenty of stories from the Garvin's days.
There was a comedian that came to New York named Rich Scheidner, who's been around a long time. He was married to Carol Leifer, who's the woman who Elaine on Seinfeld was based on. And I used to book these guys, and Rich Scheidner used to book Garvin's. He used to book the New York acts for Garvin's when he came to New York. And it was funny because I had a couple of things on my album that, you know, prevented me. I had some real bad jokes on my first album. I think I had the word "beep" in one of the jokes. You know, I didn't know any better.
Right.
And he said, you know, lighten it up and you can come down there. But the first time I went to Garvin's, we drove down. It was me and Richie Minervini, Rob Bartlett, and Eddie Murphy.
Rob oh, my
Bartlett.
Goodness, yes. Wow. And I
and
love Rob
And we drove
Rob
down
Bartlett.
There, and I drank 20 beers on the way. And Bartlett was driving, and Eddie was, I think he's still in awe of how much beer I put away. And we went down there, and each of us was worse than the other. And I think the quote from Harry Montecrusos and Jeff Penn, the two bookers, and Harry owned the place, and Jeff and him were partners. and they said it was the worst comedy and the most fun they've ever had. We were all horrible, but we all had so much fun, and it was just incredible. Eventually, I got to work down there.
Yeah.
And in 1982, it was the August of 1982, I was working down there, and Harry Montecrusos very, very infamously said to me, "Hey, listen, there's a guy that used to do broadcasts in his underwear here on Friday mornings. He's a wild man. He just got fired from DC 101, and he's going to New York. You really should look him up." At the time, I had put out a comedy album. I put out another comedy album. By 1982, I had three comedy LPs out, you know, regular wax comedy records with matching cassettes. She wasn't my wife yet at the time, but Nancy Sirianni was working with me.
Mm-hmm.
With Dial a Joke had reached 10 lines. We started Governor's Comedy Shop. We started the Brokerage Comedy Shop. So we're actually making a little bit of money, but Jokeland was literally in the attic of my mother's house. And we sent out copies of these records to everybody. I mean, if I was walking down the street and somebody said, "Man, I think I saw you at a comedy club. You're funny." I'd say, "Give me your name and address." And I would send all three records,
wow,
all three cassettes, all my promo. We sent out and we couldn't afford it. Just imagine what the records, the cassettes,
sure,
the postage.
Yeah. Right.
We couldn't afford it. But one of those sets of three records, three cassettes, and all the promo was sent blindly to Howard Stern, care of NBC AM, Rockefeller Plaza, New York City. Nancy calls up and says, "Jackie, that disc jockey Howard Stern called. He wants you to call him back."
Wow.
I had no idea who he was. I was a hippie. I listened to my own cassettes of music and comedy. And, you know, I didn't know from radio. I didn't care.
Right.
And it was a Tuesday in February of 1983. And I called up, and Howard got right on the phone. He said, "Listen, man, we listened to all your records. You know every joke in the world. We're doing a talent contest over the telephone today on the radio. Do you want to come in and hang out?"
Wow.
I said, "What the hell?" Drove into New York City, 30 Rockefeller Plaza. Walked in. It was Howard, Robin, and Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down, and after 4 hours, the show was over, and they looked at me and said, "Man, you're fun. Why don't you come back next week?" I came back once a week for free for 3 years. We went to mornings in 1986, and we went to Pluto.
That's
my Garvin story.
Isn't that so? I never knew that Harry was the guy. And I got it. Harry was the owner of Garvin's, and this guy was a character. He used to have a weapon in his boot, and you know, he was really something else. But
he not only had a weapon in his boots, Tony. There's a lot of stories about this guy.
Oh, I know. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, ultimately, you know, lost the club because of not paying taxes. Unfortunately, literally one night, all of the comics, we all showed up, and the club was closed with a thing from the IRS on the door saying it's over.
Wow.
Yeah, that happens. You know, Minervini showed up at the East Side Comedy Club one night, and they were walking out with the tables and chairs, you know.
But I never knew that Harry was the guy who said to you, "You need to check out this guy, Howard Stern. You should get together with him." That's amazing.
Is that a great story?
That's fantastic.
That is the classic story of all time. And that was the classic story of throwing stuff against the wall and something sticks.
Yep.
We sent out so much stuff, but it paid for all of them.
Yep.
And still does.
Hey, Jackie.
You know what I mean?
Jackie, whatever happened to Howard?
You know what? I heard he had this hot show, and then he got rid of a couple of the main things on the show, and I guess he kind of disappeared. It's like the Yankees got rid of Babe Ruth, and all of a sudden they couldn't beat Kansas City. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I heard that's what
happened.
You know
what? There's no animosity. You know, people want to make a big thing about it, but I asked, you know, I was beat. I asked for more money. They said no, and I went home.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's not a lot more to it than that. I mean, there were more reasons, and et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line was, you know, Tony, I'll tell you, look, you're a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody says, "Do you want to work in Alaska?" You don't say no.
Right.
You say how much.
Right, that's right.
They say how much you want. If somebody says how much you want to go to Alaska, and saying no, instead of saying no, you say, "I want $50,000.
Right.
They say you're crazy, and say, "All right, you know, we didn't come to terms."
Right.
You know, it's like the guy in the bar saying to a girl, "Will you make love to me for $1 million? And she says, "Of course." And he says, "What about for $5? And she said, "What kind of girl do you think I am?" And he says, "Well, we already know that. Well, now we're just arguing about the price." You know, it's a question of, you don't say no. You just, it's whether you're in the ball game. And I drew a line in the sand for myself, and they said, that's the thickest line we've ever seen, and they scraped it away, you know?
You know what? It's business. Things happen. They don't always go the way we want them to go, but, you know, you're still, I know you're still on Stern from time to time. You have the radio show on the Stern channel, right, on Sirius?
Right. Well, to quote my accountant told me I did a 9/11 to my bank account. But, yeah, I'm on Howard 101 every Tuesday night at about 7 p.m. with Jackie's Joke Hunt, which is solid dirty jokes and really, really great fun. We just finished our eighth year of these stupid jokes, and it's great fun. And, yeah, I go on Howard once in a while, and I'm still doing my gigs. You know, some gigs I'm headlining in Las Vegas, and like last night I worked at a restaurant bar in Jersey. And luckily, there were no razor blades around. You know what I mean?
Jackie, I want to ask you a question, because I used to marvel when I would see you perform live, and two things jump out at me. First of all, do you have a sense of how many jokes you actually know?
Yeah, Tony, but I'm not boring enough to answer a question like that.
I think you
are. No, you know what? It's about 200. It's give or take 50. You know, it's so funny.
Wait a minute. It's not 200. It's got to be thousands.
It's 200,000, no, isn't it?
It seems like a lot more than it is. I'll tell you, it's funny. A guy bought a copy of my CD, F. Jackie, last night. And he said, is this a lot of the jokes you told tonight? I said, yeah, well, I got six CDs, and my act is the best of the six CDs, and they're each 80 minutes long, so that you were talking about 6 hours worth of stuff. And the guy looks, and he goes, no, there's only 23 jokes on here. I said, you moron, there's 23 tracks on there. And each track is about 15. But, of course, this is all going over and over in my mind. I'm not calling him a moron because I didn't have his $20 yet. You know? But it seems like a lot more than it is. And I've always really enjoyed doing that. And, you know, it's funny. I work for George Schlatter. He's the guy who created Laughing.
Mm, yeah.
George M. Schlatter, and he had a show called George Schlatter's Comedy Shop.
I remember that.
In the mid-80s, and he's a guy, we still communicate all the time. We're very, very good friends, because he loves jokes. And when I did my spot, he came over and said, my God, how many jokes was that? And I think it was like 24 or something. Mm-hmm. I said, 24? He said, you mean 524? Because it seems like so much more, because, of course, because I laugh after every sentence, you know, so...
You do enjoy yourself.
You know what? I really do. I always tell people, I say, look, I could do this in an elevator. I don't care. You know, but it's so funny, because I was saying to I just said to my girlfriend, I said, I got to do a one-man show. It's ridiculous, because I'm looking last night at these sedate people sitting in this restaurant, eating some dinner, having some drinks, sitting there, you know, quiet, and then the opening act goes up and does 10 minutes, and they did look up from their food a few times, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just go on that stage, and then for an hour, I've got these people screaming, and I'm like, that's got to be worth something. These are just average schlubs in Jersey, nice people sitting there. Next thing you know, they're screaming, and the dirtier I got, the more they laugh. Because it's just fun. It's just unmitigated fun. There's nothing. You don't learn anything. You don't walk away with anything except maybe an off-color joke to tell at work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but the magic works, especially in this day and age. Everybody needs a laugh. Everybody would have a small wiener like Gary that they can look at.
Hey, is that only because I gave you time to just talk and just sit here? And I don't remember I don't remember you ever seeing it.
Well, the truth is, I know I've been talking way too long, and I had to give him a place to jump in and get mad.
I'm always mad at you, but listen, there's no such thing as you talking too much. That's why you're here. We don't do interviews. We have conversations, or we allow monologues.
Listen, one thing I got to say, the most important thing that I want to plug is I have a Twitter following, finally, and I've been tweeting a joke at 4:20 p.m., which is International Marijuana Time. I've been tweeting a joke at 4:20 p.m. for about a year and a half, and I'm up to 27,000 people, And people love it because, you know, you can imagine after a year and a half, it gets thin. Like, some of the jokes are funny. Some of them aren't. Some of them are so filthy. Some are clean. But people love it because every day at 420, there's a new joke.
Love it,
you know, it's a fun thing. So anybody that wants to get a joke at 420, it's at Jackie Martling, JACKIEMARTLING. And I'll tell you guys, that's a story itself. When I was on the Stern Show, and ever since, anything that came out, any kind of new media, I could never get my name.
Really?
Because people always be, if you knew the fight I went through to get at Jackie Martling.
I'm sure.
Somebody had at Jackie Martling, and I don't know how well you know Twitter, but I'm just learning it. They only not had at Jackie Martling. They had the blue check. Which absolutely guarantees people that they're hearing it from me.
Oh,
and it wasn't me.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
We went right to the top, and it still was a magnificent Stuart Tracht, T-R-A-C-T-E, Stuart Tracht, a great guy, funny guy, really great entrepreneur. He went to work, and he got me. He had to fight for like 2 months to get me my own name.
Wow.
I can't get JackieMartling.com. I can't get Jackie Martling at Gmail. I can't. It's unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy?
Jackie, isn't it that people buy it because they want
Squatters.
You to buy it from
yeah.
them?
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying you can't get it, but I think somebody would offer it to you.
No, because, you know, I email, I've tried to get it, people start communicating. They would rather break my chops because they think they're being Howard. They think they're being Howard Stern.
Right,
you know what
of
I mean?
Course,
they say,
right.
Let's screw with Jackie, which is, in some crazy, twisted way, is flattering.
I think you deserve it.
Now, so let me ask you a question. Now that you have at Jackie Martling, do you have the blue check or you're unverified?
I'm still working on it. The guy was over here. He's still not sure. He thought I was taller and funnier, and I called him a dick, and he left. Hey, this is going long enough. I got to tell you a joke.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Now, should I tell you a joke with a naughty word in it that you can bleep? I talked
sure,
to Stein
yeah.
about this, but
sure.
of course he was so muddy with his answer.
Jackie, that's not true. I was just bored.
Go for it.
Gary, there is no room for truth in this discussion.
Go for the joke, Jack. We'll take care of it.
So a guy goes for a job interview, and the job interviewer says, what do you think is your biggest fault? The guy says, I think my biggest fault is my honesty. The interviewer says, I don't think honesty is a fault. The guy says, I don't give a fuck what you think.
That is good.
So a guy goes to the library. She says, a librarian, I need a book on suicide. She says, like hell, you won't bring it back. All right, here's my last one, and then we'll get back to being serious.
Okay.
The wife says, get out! Get the hell out! Get out! And as her husband's walking out the door, she says, I hope you die a slow, painful death. He says, so now you want me to stay?
Make up your mind.
Jackie.
All right, boys, where were we?
I apologize. This is Oscar Santana. I work with the guys here on the
show.
And he's
apologizing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, I just, I'm a huge fan, so if I dork out, you know, in advance, my apologies. So, one of the most famous stories.
Why do I have to talk to the guy that's on deck? Why do I have to talk to the bat boy? I thought I was talking to the main guy.
We told him he could ask one question.
I've been
question.
On the phone 5 minutes and I'm already talking to the alternate. Hey, I'm only kidding. I'm going to throw in a plug here. My good friend Tom Bernard is the president of Sony Pictures Classics.
Yeah.
He's so big that when Claire Danes won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress, she didn't thank Sony Pictures Classics. She didn't thank Tom Bernard and Michael Barker. She thanked Tom and Michael, just like you thank Sonny and Cher. And everybody at the Oscars knows who Tom and Michael is. And their new movie is called Whiplash.
Oh, wow.
And the alternate drummer, the word alternate made me think of this because I saw it yesterday. It is so good. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but J.K. Simmons is going to get the Oscar.
Great.
It is so, so good. You guys will love it.
And this kid, what is this kid's name? Michael
Teller? I don't know the kid's name,
Michael
but he's
Teller.
So good. And if you like the arts and like music and like creativity, I mean, it's... Yeah. It's over the top. It's really great. And that's the end of that plug, and that's why I said alternate. Jackie,
I listen to you every Tuesday night. I'm a big fan. One of the best stories you talk about, and you're ahead of your time with your comedy albums, the way that you used to do them, the way you used to do them yourselves and put them out, and people would buy them. I've bought your comedy albums. But you tell a great story at one point where Eddie Murphy actually asked you before he got massively huge on how to do a comedy album. Do you remember that story?
No, he didn't ask me how to do it.
Okay.
I'll tell you his exact words. I put out a record, and I was at the East Side Comedy Club, and he came up to me and said, "Jack, you got an album? I want an album. And he was like, you know, he wanted me to help him make an album. Mm-hmm. And I said these words: "I'm sorry, Eddie, I'm too busy."
Oh my goodness.
You could God strike me dead. I didn't think he was all that funny. I thought, you know what? And this is not racist. I thought he was funny because he was a black guy and he played the black card real strong, you know, and, but he was so cocky.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't any different than he is today. He was the guy he is. He said, "Jack, I'm going to be bigger than the Beatles." Mm-hmm. And he became almost as big as he really did. He had that crazy, crazy confidence.
Oh, yeah.
And he was always a nice guy, and he never drank. He drank a Coke with no ice. He was a good guy. I recently have been in touch with Clint Smith. I mean, I have some... you know what? Eddie Murphy stories that are just so great.
Give us one. Because I'm going to ask you, you had this car ride with Eddie and with Rob Bartlett. I'm going to ask you about Rob in a moment.
Rob is an old dear friend.
Is fantastic. He was one of my favorite comics back in the day when, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. I thought he was fabulous and a good guy. One of my favorite things about the comedy, and when you mentioned earlier Jeff Penn and Harry saying that was some of the worst comedy ever, but you guys were great, we had a good time. That was my memory of Garvin's and some other comedy clubs, was after the comedy shows sitting around, and Rob Bartlett was one of these guys, and just sitting around for 2 hours after the club was closed, laughing and laughing and telling stories, and everybody's topping everybody else. It was fantastic.
Tony, I'm telling you, every time, and I'm going to say this, and I've said this to the point where people want to shoot themselves. We were working at this horrible club called Bananas in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy called the Legendary Wid. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do. Oh, my goodness.
The Legendary Wid and me and a guitar-playing comedian named Kevin Sullivan, Bob Nelson.
Yeah.
There was about five or six or seven of us, and some of the guys had worked at the Comedy Works that night, some people at Bananas, some people at the Comedy Factory Outlet, all these great places. This is long before I met Howard Stern. This is like 1979 or 1980. And after one of these shows, a gang of us all wound up in the same place, about eight or ten of us. And just like you just described, we were laughing and screaming and howling, and I can still remember the Legendary Wid, Michael Baldwin, jumped up and said, "This is a show! This is a show! This is a great show!" And I'm telling you, Tony, to this day, that magnificence has never been captured. I don't care if you're talking about Colin Quinn's Tough Room or Paul Prevenza's Green Room. Mm-hmm. It all gets either Hollywoodized or something happens. You never get that gut, real, organic craziness, huge laughter that you get. You know, it's like Seinfeld's two guys in cars drinking coffee. If you change it to eight comedians sitting around smoking pot and drinking beer, then you got, you know, it's not that that's not a great show, but it's not that organic thing that you're talking about.
Yep.
Whether it's musicians or comedians, and it's that real heartfelt, dirty, insulting each other, but all in good fun, you know. I'm gonna capture that if it's the last thing I ever do.
Well, you know what? I hope you do. Jeff Penn and I, you mentioned Jeff earlier. He was actually on the show a couple of weeks ago. We pitched that show to HBO and others. We went out to LA to do it. I won't say what we called the show, but the exact same thing. We said, you know what? This is a show. And no one did it. The first person to get close was, Bill Maher did a kind of a version. But you're right. Everyone has changed it and done something else, and they haven't captured that organic comics just riffing.
Well, they
laughter.
Don't trust it to let it just be.
And it would be fabulous. Jackie, please do it. Please do it.
I'll tell you, I have one regret. I wish Jeff Penn had been on your show just before me, because that would really make me look great.
And
Jeff,
true.
It sounded like I said that just to hurt you.
Hey, Jackie, you know what? I don't want to be pandering or anything, and I've used that word a lot on the show. I've known you for years, and I just want to say, after all this time and all the jokes today and everything you've done, I'm so sick of you.
Oh, come on. How dare you?
Wow.
Jackie, you said you had an Eddie Murphy story you wanted to share with us.
Hey, Gary.
Yes?
Helen Keller saw that insult coming.
When did you use that last?
About 10 seconds ago. So it's so funny. I put out a CD called Hot Dogs and Donuts. I guess I should plug myself. I got 6 CDs that are all available.
Start? Yeah, start
They're
plugging
available
yourself.
Like, shut up. On Amazon, iTunes. It's The Joke Man, Sergeant Pecker, Hot Dogs and Donuts, Sergeant F. Pecker. Jackie, Come Again, and Snart. 6 different CDs, 80 minutes long each, no repeated jokes. If you like dirty jokes, it's the best stuff in the world. If you don't like dirty jokes, of course, don't even think about it. Now, let me tell you, I was promoting Hot Dogs and Donuts.
Which, great
name, by
the way.
In a nutshell, I put out a CD called Sergeant Pecker, and the women in Omaha from West Telemarketing all of a sudden decided that they weren't going to say the word pecker over the telephone. So I had to stop selling Sergeant Pecker, and I announced it on the Stern Show that this is the last day of Sergeant Pecker, and I sold like 25,000 in one day.
Wait a minute. The women taking the orders wouldn't say pecker?
Well, they had done it, and I guess they banded together and didn't like the idea. Pecker, David Pecker. David Pecker owns the National Enquirer. It's a guy's name. It's a thing on a chicken's nose. I mean, come on. It's not an inherently dirty word.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, you know, a camel has a hump on its back. You know what I mean?
Right. So hump isn't a bad word.
A hump on a camel's back. Hump is not a dirty word unless you're talking about a camel being on another camel's back. Hey, I'm getting funnier as we go along.
Well, you're certainly enjoying it.
The point is, I made the next CD called, I called the next CD Hot Dogs and Donuts, because I figured if you put that together to be dirty, you can go to hell, okay? So I was promoting it, and I was on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you said Eddie Murphy's story, and this is one, so just sit tight.
Okay.
So Bill Maher gets up and holds up Hot Dogs and Donuts as he's introducing me, and he gave it this glowing review. And I know he didn't listen to 5 seconds of it. And I got done, you know, we got done with the show. It was a great show. You know, Politically Incorrect was really fun.
Yes.
And I was on so long ago, I was on with Ariana Huffington and Lou Diamond Phillips and Alan Thicke. It was great, great fun. And Monica Lewinsky was in the news. I mean, talk about comedy gifts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get done with the show and I say, Jesus, Bill, that was some glowing plug you gave me for Hot Dogs and Donuts. He said, come on, Jackie, it's the least I could do for the guy that gave me my ride home from my first stand-up comedy gig.
Wow. Really?
Now, Bill Maher was a comic in New York, but what he meant was his first gig where he actually got paid for going on the... It was Hal Ennis's Comedy Caravan. Now, listen to this story, because this is a famous, famous Howard Stern story that they always said, well, that's why Jackie wound up not getting to be in the movies with Eddie Murphy. What happened was that Dave Hawthorne, who's a whole nother story, Dave Hawthorne was partners with Billy Crystal in 1970 mm-hmm. at Nassau Community College. Do you guys watch, did you watch The Last Leno?
Yes.
And The Last Leno, he had on...
Which Last Leno? There were a couple of Last Lenos.
The Last Leno.
Gotcha. Yeah, saw that.
And he had Billy Crystal on.
Yes.
And he said, yeah, Billy, you know, I've known you so long. I remember you guys, you had a group and you opened up for me at Nassau Community College. And Billy goes, yeah, it was me and Dave Hawthorne and Al Finelli. And they actually showed a picture of the group.
Uh-huh.
And in Billy's 700 Sundays, he doesn't mention the Three's Company. He doesn't mention that group.
Right.
But Hawthorne's been around forever. And so Hawthorne was going through his second lifetime with us when I met him. And he's such a great, funny, funny character. He's the bartender at the end of... As Good As It Gets. If you ever watch that movie again, you'll remember.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And he's a character. So Hawthorne's driving, and he's got this old piece of crap car. So Hawthorne picks up me and my guitar, and we pick up Eddie Murphy And Clint Smith, his really good friend, who I'm back in touch with, who's a great guy. Mm-hmm. And we go to Hal Ennis's Comedy Caravan. And on the way, we stop in the city. We give Bill Maher a ride home from this gig. So Bill Maher asks us for a ride home. We give Bill Maher a ride home. We're going over the cobblestones up in the west side, and Hawthorne's muffler falls down. It's the winter. I'm underneath Hawthorne's car tying up a hot muffler with a guitar string. Okay, we tie it up with a guitar string. We're riding home on the Southern State Parkway, which has virtually no shoulder. The muffler falls down again. I'm underneath the car on this. The shoulder is barely wide enough for a car. Uh-huh. The cars are zooming by. I'm underneath, burning my hands, but I'm freezing, tying up the muffler with a guitar string. And Murphy and Clint Smith are in the back seat in the heated car, goofing on me, goofing on Hawthorne, making fun of this piece of crap car. After we just gave him a ride to and from the gig, they're both about 16 years old. We get back in the car, we get back to Murphy's, to Roosevelt, and Murphy's house is at the end of the street, uh-huh. but the street is all potholes and busted up because they're doing work on the street. Uh-huh. So Hawthorne doesn't want to go down the street to give them a ride because it's going to make the muffler fall out again. So they had to get out and walk the length of the street in the 0-degree weather. And to this day, everybody says, that's why Murphy never puts you in a movie, because you guys dropped them off at the end of the street. And I can still hear them laugh. And you know what? I talked to Clint about a month ago, and I said, Clint, I'm going to tell you my version of the story. When I got done, he said, that's exactly what happened.
Wow.
He said,
how
hysterical is that? Is that great?
That is great. That's.
But yeah. I completely forgot that Bill Maher was part of the story. And all of a sudden, Bill Maher goes, yeah, the guy who gave me a ride home from, and that, you know, filled in the blanks of why the muffler fell out. Right. So great. My one other favorite Eddie Murphy story is when we started, there was the same group of guys. It was me and Richie Minervini and Jim Myers and Bob Nelson. And you people that are listening, Bob Nelson's a very famous comic.
One of the best comics ever.
He's so good. And Rob Bartlett is on the Don Imus show. Imus in the morning, and he was on Broadway. He did some great. He was in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. He was the boss that played two roles. He's just so talented, it's frightening. And Dave Hawthorne, who'd been around forever, and this big fat guy Bob Woods, and Eddie Murphy, and it was a core group of us that worked all these gigs. And there mm-hmm. were no comedy clubs. You know, we hopped in the car and went to this place, and I produced the shows because I had a guitar amplifier and speakers and a microphone because I made the transition from music to comedy. It's mm-hmm. all a long story. It's going to be interesting. My book is going to be so much fun.
You got to write a book.
But at the end of every show, I always went last because I was loud and dirty, mm-hmm. and I went long. And so if the show needed extra time, so I always went long. So I always played the same. There was like four different songs that I played at the end of a show, you know. And if you work with people long enough, you know their acts. You know what they do. Tony, you know that. And
Absolutely. And
if the song comes on, how many songs do you hear on the radio when you're driving down and an oldie comes on and says, oh, remember this one? And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I hated that song. But the point is that song gets in your head. So at the end of our gigs, I would always play one of my four specific songs. Hey, by the way, anybody wants a copy of this album, I'm generous with it. You send me your address, I will send you a copy of my music CD because I love it.
Okay, cool.
All you got to do is email me, jokeland@AOL.com with your street address. I'll send it to anybody, jokeland@AOL.com. Don't say anything about AOL.com. I don't want to hear it. I still use it. My comedy album's called Happy Endings, and at the end of each show, we would play songs. I would play songs, and sometimes when we really got going and we got a little drunk, I'd play You Are My Sunshine on the guitar, and the guys would come on stage and sing along, and Nelson used to take balloon solos. He would rub his fingers on the balloon and make noise. I mean, you wouldn't believe how crazy we were. Just imagine me and Murphy and Bartlett and Nelson and Minervini, six of us on the stage singing You Are My Sunshine. I mean, these were shows people still remember, right? So meanwhile, at the end of each show, I would do one of my songs is the point. And one night at the East Side Comedy Club, I was hosting, and I think I opened up with a song and then introduced the first act. And I came off, And this is the honest to God truth. And when this came back into my head, and when I thought of this, I said sent FedExes everywhere I could to try and find Eddie. And I'm sure, I don't know if you ever saw it or not, but I came off stage and he came up and he said, "Jack, you know, I got like 5 favorite songs. And 3 of them are yours." I swear to God he said that. And I'm thinking to myself, if he liked my songs, if he heard them now, he would remember them.
I'm sure he would. Know? Because those were the formative years. And, you know, I hear these stories about Eddie Murphy, and I know he did the comedy circuit for a relatively short period of time when he was a kid.
Very short.
Yeah, started as a kid, but then had this huge success. I feel bad for him because his life changed in wonderful ways, you know, rich and all that kind of stuff. But he has become insulated. You know, he leads this. He almost became, you know, he's fascinated with Elvis. He almost became like Elvis. He's got Bubble Hill or whatever it's called, and you know, his
Bubble Hill was like a billion years ago.
Yeah.
We don't know. He probably has a very good circle of friends and has a lot of fun. There's no way to know. You know, you never know. It's just like with Howard. I always wondered if when him and his wife closed the door, if the party started or whether they stared at each other. Yeah. And it turns out, I guess, they were staring at each other. But you like to think that people are having the time of their life. So we have no real way of knowing. But, yeah, like, but, you know, I would love to spend 10 minutes with him and laugh.
I'll bet he misses you guys. I would bet he misses those times. Misses those times.
Tony, I don't know about you, but every time I tell these stories, I remember more about the first year I was in comedy than I remember about the 34 years since then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm exaggerating, but Jesus, I am not exaggerating that much because it was so formative, crazy. Yep. We were all so frightened, and it was so much fun. It was insane. You know, I'll tell you, we had the Howard Stern show on Channel 9 in like 1989, and I went to the China Club for some kind of event one night, and Murphy was there. And I hadn't seen him in years, you know, and I didn't want to go bother him, you know, and he came walking up to me and said, he said, "Jack, you know that Channel 9 show? That is the funniest thing on television. And no, I'm not doing the show." I swear to God, it's his exact words. "And no, I'm not doing the show." Oh, here's Tony. Here's a great racist joke.
He's looking forward to that.
That's not a setup you often hear.
Yeah, that's a great racist joke.
When Eddie first really started killing, he went from zero to a billion.
Yeah.
Right? Like Richie Tinkin, who owns the comic strip, who still does, who's still there every night, one of the more delightful guys. I remember when I met him, he said, "Jackie, I'm a club owner, and we all know what that means. They're all pieces of dirt." He says, "I'm just the best piece of dirt." And, you know, when it comes to club owners, he's the very, very best, but he's still a club owner. And that's not even true because he's a great guy. But he was Eddie Murphy's manager. Him and Bob Wax, who owned the comic strip, he passed away, but they were Eddie's managers. And they took him to the moon. And it happened so fast. So I called up Richie and I said, "Geez, I was booking the Brokerage Comedy Club and Governor's Comedy Shop. You know, these were in my power. I was hosting and booking the shows, and somebody dropped out. It was really early on. It was like 1981. I think he might have just gotten Saturday Night Live. I forget exactly where he was, but it was part of his ridiculous rise to stardom. And I called up Tinkin and said, "Listen, somebody just canceled the Brokerage, and I need somebody, and Eddie lives right near there. Do you think he'll do it?" And he goes, "Well, look, you can call him," he said, "but I just got him, you know, CW Post for $10,000. And I'm like, "Well, this doesn't pay that much." And so he goes, "Well, you can try." So I called Eddie and I said, "Come on, do me a favor. Somebody dropped out. I need you to, you know, to help me and be on the show at the Brokerage." And he agreed to do it.
Wow.
So cool. he comes to the Brokerage and, you know, we did 2 shows, you know, just like we always did.
Sure.
And at the end of the show, he came up and he said, "Jack, what am I getting paid for this?" And I said, $50. And he said, $50? That's slave labor. And I said, lest you forget. Which could be another reason I haven't seen him. He said the same thing. He always said the same thing to me, no matter what I say. He said, "You're crazy." And if I had a nickel for every time Eddie Murphy said to me, Jack, you're crazy. When we did that show that we gave Bill Maher a ride home from, that Hal Ennis's Comedy Caravan, and I was hosting. So I went up to host, and I opened with about 10 or 15 minutes. And when I came off the stage, Eddie, you know, I remember what the things he said to me. I just do. And I came off stage, and he said, Jack, they laughed every time you opened your mouth. And Dave Hawthorne turned to him and said, that's the idea, Eddie. Gary, you know me well enough. These are true stories. I don't have to make this stuff up. It's so fun.
Listen,
so
I had a million lunches with you at the Friars Club, and I remember laughing and not eating.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's how I save money.
I want to know when you're taking me again. When am I going to the Friars Club with you?
I would like to take, in fact, even Oscar. Even Ford.
Wow.
You guys, you know what? I don't have any money. I don't have any money, but it's so nice you guys have me on. If you guys come up to New York City, we will go to the Friars Club
We will treat you.
It's our treat, buddy boy.
Tony, Tony.
Yes.
Tony, look at that guy next to you. What's he do on Sunday? He goes to temple.
Yeah, yeah.
That son of a bitch knows that you guys aren't allowed to pay at the comedy at the Friars Club. I'm the only one that'll be allowed to pay. So of course he's gonna volunteer to pay because he knows he can't pay. He knows I have to pay. Oh, we'll treat you. We'll treat you.
I wasn't gonna get to that until we had the lunch. Listen, Rob Ford is ready to start the interview now. If you'd like to, I think you've done enough warming up. He's going to turn it on.
Now
okay.
We're going to record.
Yeah.
Jackie.
All I can think of, my ex-wife Nancy Sirianni is one of the great people of all time. She still lives two doors away, and when we were married, her sister got married in France. So me and Nancy, her father, her stepmother, her mother, her stepfather, her two sisters, the fiancé, the whole gang of us are in Paris. This is the time of a lifetime. And her father, God rest his soul, he's dead, but he's a piece of dirt. So we go out for lunch at this really nice French outdoor bistro, and there's a gang of us. And her father's like, whatever you want, whatever you want, it's on me. This is my party. It's on me. And I'm telling you, every 3 feet on the wall behind where we're sitting, cash, no credit cards. Cash, no credit cards. Every 3 feet. The meal must have cost $7,000. And when the meal gets done, I can still see the waiter standing there handing Paul the check, and I can hear him saying, what do you mean you don't take credit cards? And in my vision of him, you could see three of those signs. I wish I had an iPhone. What do you mean you don't take credit cards? So who do you think paid for the meal?
Oh, no.
Jackie Marlowe. No. So, you know, I'm used to this crap. It's on me.
Listen. When we go to the Friars Club, I'm going to pay the tax.
Suddenly I like Jewish people less than black people.
Suddenly. That didn't just happen.
You know what? To tell you the truth, Tony, I used to tell all kinds of jokes in my act, and I still tell, you know, Asian jokes, and I still tell Polish jokes, but I really have, you know, with Obama being president and everything, it's really made me back off from the whole, you know, African-American. In fact, did you hear they just announced, this is ridiculous, they just said that Obama's going to make an Ebola speech in Detroit a couple days from now, and then they're going to make him stand behind a 2-inch thick piece of glass. Which I think is crazy. Just because he's black, I don't think he's going to shoot anybody.
Oh, my God.
Boy, do you kill yourself.
I could do this act in an elevator. Listen, if you want a joke every day at 4:20, hey, I got a job, Gary. I'm the East Coast correspondent of the National Marijuana News.
Are you
at
really?
At National MJ News. It's a startup. These guys, radio guys, they started this whole thing with skin and grafting and this whole medical thing. Then they branched into medical marijuana, and then they were so hugely successful that they said, wait, there's no go-to place for marijuana news. And there's so much going on with pot.
Yes,
I mean,
there
it's
is.
Become such a crazy industry, and there's such a war to legalize. And so I'm their East Coast correspondent, and a couple of days ago, about a week ago, I interviewed Michael Kennedy, who's the owner and head guy at High Times. He hadn't done an interview in 20 years, but he's a dear old friend of mine. I mean, we used to hide in doorways smoking pot at you know, movie openings. And I interviewed him, and Thursday night, you're not going to believe this, Thursday night was the 40th anniversary of High Times magazine.
Wow. Really?
Can you believe that? And it went through some lean times where it almost became a pamphlet, and now it's thicker than Penthouse. They're fighting away the advertisers because it's a billion, bazillion dollar business
and
now.
And growing.
And what? And I was there. We went around. You know who I interviewed Thursday night? The black
Cheech
woman that quit on the air.
Remember the black woman? Yeah. Up in Alaska. Yeah.
She is so beautiful and so cool.
Yes,
now, do you guys have pictures or anything, that's like a website?
We have a website, TonyPerkinsShow.com, and we put up pictures and on Facebook.
But we're not putting up that naked shot of you that you just sent.
No, it's worse than I thought. But I'm going to send you the picture of me and Charlo.
Please do.
We'll put that up.
I don't remember her name, but we talked about her on the air.
It's not Charo, right?
It's not Charo, no.
Yeah, no, but it sounds like that, Charlo. Are people actually listening to this? I'm coming to Boston on November 1st. You know Lenny Clark? You ever work with him?
Yeah, we know Lenny Clark.
I love Lenny Clark. Well, it's me and Lenny Clark working for his brother Mike Clark. Tony, you want to talk about having some hard bark on you? I've been doing this a long time, but the last time I was there, I had to follow Lenny. It was Lenny Clark and then me.
Wow.
And the first show on Friday was Steve Sweeney and then Lenny Clark and then me. Now, that takes some hard bark. And Lenny killed and I killed. And the two shows on Saturday, Lenny killed and I killed. And I was... I don't get intimidated by anything, but he's one of the funniest guys. Not only is he one of the funniest guys on the planet, and not only is Boston his hometown, but it's his brother's club. Mm-hmm. But me and Lenny go back so far, and he just endorsed me so much, and we just, you know, it was just great.
I learned something. The first time I went on stage at Catch a Rising Star in New York, I'd driven up from Washington. They didn't know me, but they said, all right, we'll put you on, kid. It was a weeknight. The night was not going well, and I actually had the cojones to go. I forget who the MC was, and I kept saying, I think I would do okay. He said, I don't know you, so no. Paul Reiser walks in because he's going to be on Letterman the next night. So they put him right up. He does, you know, he's working out his material for Letterman, gets the crowd going, and then the MC says to me, all right, you're next. And my first reaction was, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. But it was the best thing in the world. He got the crowd
going.
Because
they were rolling, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So I never get intimidated by a good opening act.
So what year was this? Was it Kelly Rogers? Was it David Say?
David Say. It wasn't David Say. I don't remember who it was, but this would have been around maybe 90, 89, something like that.
Listen, we've been talking too long. I told Gary I want to do this again because I got to tell you my David Say story, which was one of the linchpins of my entire life.
Okay.
And we got so much to talk about.
Well, here's what I want to do. First of all, give me the marijuana thing again so people can see that, or where do people see you doing that?
It's thenationalmarijuananews.com. The Twitter is @NationalMJNews. And it's going to be huge. It's still in its formulating stages, you know.
Okay.
But if you get on my email list, you get 30 jokes once or twice a month. You get a list of all the places I'm playing, so you can come out if you want to come out to a show. And it also says what's going on with the National MJ News. All you have to do is send me an email, jokeland@AOL.com, jokeland@AOL.com. No salesman will call. I still have my ridiculous style joke, 516-922-WINE, which is 516-922-9463. That's a whole nother story that I'll really enjoy explaining
our
to you
listeners,
guys.
Listen, Jackie, our listeners are going to have to create an Excel spreadsheet.
the story of 922 Wine is Rick Dees got a hold of it, and Rick Dees is the guy who named me Jackie the Joke Man Martling, which is kind of fun.
I didn't know that.
Because I was on the Rick Dees show and the Howard Stern show concurrently, and one guy was the devil and the other guy was the angel. You know, Rick Dees was white bread and clean and so sweet, mm-hmm. and his Howard Stern was dark and mysterious, mm-hmm. and I was working both of them at the same time, both sides of the street.
That is interesting.
I'm sorry I ran my mouth so damn much.
No, that's okay.
Oh, I hardly heard a thing.
I want to remind people you're on Twitter, at Jackie Martling, and you tweet out a joke every day at 420.
National Marijuana Time. Also, I'm sure there's people in Florida. I'm going to be at Delray Beach, Delray Center for the Arts, on a Wednesday night, November 5th. I haven't been to Florida in a long time. Well, you know.
When are you going to be in Secaucus?
That's not funny. I'm going to be. It's funny. You know, I used to work all the time down in Florida at the New York Comedy Club. And Tony, did you ever work? The New York Comedy Club in Boca Raton was owned by Don Siegel.
Oh, I remember Don Siegel.
He was Harry's partner at Garvin.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Don Siegel. I only worked in Clearwater, Florida. I forget the name of the club. I never got any further south than that.
Oh, down with, what's his name?
You didn't want to be further south than that.
That was south enough.
That really was.
Well, anyway,
I'm surprised you got out.
Delray Beach, November 5th, Delray Arts Center. And I just got a million things going.
Well, here's what
I
we're going to do.
Jackie, listen, take a couple of minutes and give us some plugs.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get the list, and we will put it on the website and on Facebook and everything.
You know what I love, Jackie? The thing that you've done for us today is that we're going to be able to spread this interview across 7 shows. And I actually think that Tony and I don't have to tape anymore.
Well, listen, Tony, Gary's an idiot, and he told me he wanted me to get on the phone and talk a lot.
And we appreciate it. It's been great.
Which I would have done anyway, but I appreciate you guys. And Gary, I promise next time there'll be more back and forth, but I wanted to get some information in.
No, I was good. I slept. It's good.
Gary and me tried to do a sitcom.
Oh, I know. I know the story.
You're going to think I'm crazy, Gary, but I still think it's viable because They had done nothing, and now they have done everything, and they still haven't gotten
still
to
haven't
the toll booth.
Hey, that was, you know,
they've
what?
Done it, everything but toll booths, probably for a good reason,
well,
but there's
it was
nothing
a, it
like
was,
a virgin place, you
it
know?
It was a risky idea. Nobody's ever touched it, and we figured out a way to do it. We just never got to the right people, or maybe it was the wrong time. But we do have stories about that. You got to come on again. And yeah, maybe we'll do a little more back and forth because I thought you might want to know something about me. Apparently not.
Tell him. Tell him, Tony. No,
he
don't.
He's not. He's my partner. He's not coming to your aid. He's not coming to
Tony,
your aid.
Tony, tell him. No, listen, I want you guys to do me one favor. I would like to come down there and sit there with you.
Oh, yes. I would love it.
Yes.
I would love it.
Anytime you want. Anytime
we
you want,
we will set
Jack.
That up. We will set that up.
And in all seriousness, I get asked to do a lot of these stupid podcasts, and I say no to a lot of them because I don't like to talk. But I really think the world of Gary, and I really am serious when I say it was a joy listening to you guys' podcast, and I'm flattered to be asked to do this, and I'm sorry I talk so much because a little back and forth is much funnier. I promise better next time.
Please, don't apologize.
That's not the way we work.
And I'm only on in spite of you guys being black and Jewish because I think you're so talented.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you didn't hold it against us.
Yeah.
All right, Jackie, we will have you on again soon.
No, I got to finish with one more joke.
No, okay, yes, yeah. a joke.
Yes.
6 o'clock in Harlem. 6 o'clock Sunday morning, middle of Harlem, and two people approach each other on the street. The first guy says, "Morning, motherfucker!" And the other guy says, "Good morning, Reverend." Goodbye!
Goodbye. Jackie Martling, everybody. Yeah.
I only wish he had more time to stick around. I hate these quick interviews.
Wow. Wow.
I know I said we might not get a word
in. Yeah, you did.
Edgewise, right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. But I didn't really think it would be quite like that.
He's great, though.
He is great.
Here's the thing that's amazing. I mean, there was so much there, and there's so much more there.
Really.
I mean, the stories, and now let me tell you, some of these names, and you know some of the names. He mentioned Rob Bartlett, who I haven't thought about in ages. One of the funniest comics ever. I didn't realize he's been doing the Imus show.
Yeah. He's doing characters, and he's very funny.
Oh my goodness.
A lot funnier than Imus.
I don't think Imus is funny. But no, Rob Bartlett is great. And what we'll do, Bob Nelson. Bob Nelson is probably one of the funniest. He's like a comics comic. All the comics love him, and in my view, he never quite broke through the way you thought he would break through.
You know, we should do a segment sometime on the comics, because there are people, and I used to write for comedians, you know, sitting at the Outer Room in the Improv, and there are the unsung heroes of comedy that a lot of people took material from, and actually they made it, and you don't really know why. It's very serendipitous. You have no idea, you know, how these things are going to work. But those guys, they laid the foundation for an awful lot. We should do something about that.
Yeah, we should. You know? What we will do is some of the names he mentioned, we'll try to find little clips and we'll put them on Facebook maybe during the course of this week.
That'll be great.
You know who comes to mind for me, who sort of fits in, although he's had a career, but I think that he was one of the best stand-up comics of all time. It was Rick Overton.
Oh, Rick,
isn't he amazing? And,
yes,
and then every time
is.
He's on a sitcom, it dies.
Right. Another guy, and he had shots.
He
and
did.
And just nothing ever really worked.
But his stuff was incredible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of guys out there, and Jackie
really
talks about those people.
That's
you know.
I love the Eddie Murphy stories.
Oh my goodness, those Eddie Murphy stories, because and his career has been, or you know, talking about back then, like Jackie said, so meteoric. I mean that almost never happens to anyone in any field. But you know, he was in the clubs. He was a kid. He literally was a kid. Next thing you know, he's on Saturday Night Live. And initially on Saturday Night Live, even they didn't quite use him like they would later.
Right.
And they suddenly realized this kid's got a lot
of talent.
Can
do anything.
Bang. Superstar.
Yes.
Superstar.
So how do you like Jackie's brain? Would you like to be inside there? That is the most complicated place you could ever live in.
It really is. But I am completely shocked that he said, I know about 200 jokes.
Yeah, I
thought it was going to be like 10,000.
Well, you think Jackie the Joke Man Martling, he's been called that forever.
Yeah.
And I did think that he still knew every joke that anybody ever told. But I guess not.
All right, well, that was great. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Jackie Martling, a new joke every day at 420. And the 600 other things that he promoted.
He wasn't shy about promotion, that's for sure.
Hey, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
All right. So.
I think we're out of time.
We didn't do anything yet. What do you mean we're out of time?
Wait, listen to this. This is paper of all the other stuff we're going to do. This will be on a future show.
Yeah, we want you to know we planned a show today. We really did. But we got a Jackie Martling concert, and that was okay.
Oscar, great to have you
Thank
with
you
us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for dropping in. Rob Ford.
Rob Ford.
Nice job.
Maiden Voyage.
What a show. Wow.
Yeah, we thank you all for listening. We will see you again soon.
Good.
The Tony Perkins Show. A Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.